Good afternoon, and welcome to this afternoon's NAESP Webinar Wednesday, How to Achieve Educational Equity with Dr. Howard Fields. At this time, I would like to introduce NAESP's Associate Executive Director of Professional Learning, Dr. Gracie Branch.
Thank you, Danielle, and good afternoon, everyone. I'm so excited to be here today and to introduce our keynote speaker. And I said, he obviously has a huge fan following, fan club in Missouri where he's from, because we hear from his members all the time. You've got to have Dr. Fields. So we're very excited to present him today. Dr. Howard E. Fields III is the Assistant Superintendent of Human Resources in the Kirkwood School District. And he's also the 2020 National Distinguished Principal from Missouri. If you want to follow Dr. Fields, he has several social media handles on Facebook and Twitter, and I'm going to put that information in the chat box for you today. One interesting fact, and I'm sure there are many, Dr. Fields, but one that we're going to share today, in 2017, Dr. Fields was internationally recognized by the Networked Digital Library of Theses and Dissertations for the innovativeness of his research. Accompanying his 132-page dissertation was a feature-length documentary on the topic of Missouri's student transfer law, a law that forced unaccredited school districts to pay the tuition and transportation costs for students who decided to transfer from their home district to attend an accredited school district in the same or adjoining district. So obviously your dissertation work had some real impact on legislation in Missouri. So congratulations for that. And I'm going to let you take it away.
All right. Well, first and foremost, thank you so much, Dr. Branch, for welcoming me. The entire NAESP, which have certainly over the years have had a tremendous impact on me and my leadership, and Danielle as well. She has been phenomenal with the communication that we've been a part of. And so thank you for having me. I can't see everyone, and so I do want to thank you for your time as we are certainly coming to the end of an interesting school year. This will be a school year that will eventually be in some type of museum or something. We'll be talking about all of those different things. And so I'm glad that you are spending the time with us to impact students and to impact communities. I will never get a pleasure of getting a chance to service. And so thank you for that. I really appreciate it. I'm going to go ahead and jump into this content right away. But before I do, just some information about me. My Twitter handle is right there. Throughout this presentation, you're going to see a number of QR codes. The QR codes will be an invitation to expand on the slide or the topic at hand. This is a QR code that will take you to my link tree, and that's a little bit more information, such as other social media accounts. You can get the book, and you can also look at some of my website information. But as Dr. Branch have already stated, assistant superintendent, but I am also the co-founder of BME STL, which is Black Males in Education St. Louis. We are tasked with the recruiting, developing, supporting, mentoring Black educators here in the St. Louis area. But we've had a pleasure in part due to COVID and everything being virtual, working with organizations across the country and across the world. Since then, we have co-founded the State of Black Educators Symposium, the Flipped Job Fair, and more recently, something that is about to come out called eduopenings.com, where educators can find jobs, professional development, and freelance work. And it's also an opportunity for small businesses to connect with educational-based entities for the purposes of purchase services. I am the author of How to Achieve Educational Equity, which is why we are here today to discuss and dive in a little bit. And also, as Dr. Branch have already stated, I am the 2020 National Association of Elementary School Principals from Missouri. Shout out to all of the previous principals of the year and our current principal of the year. I was just telling Gracie that we are so lucky in Missouri to have fantastic leaders, many of which I get a chance to work alongside and learn from every day. So let's jump in. Now, when I am starting this conversation, I like to provide perspective, and I like to start broad and then scale down. There's a tool by the name of Google Trends, and you can search any topic whatsoever to obtain a gauge for popularity. You can obtain a gauge for stuff that's happening. And so what I wanted to do was to provide perspective as it pertains to equity. And I wanted to start the furthest place from equity, right? I thought about, well, what are some popular shows? I don't get a chance to watch as much television as I probably would like. And so at the time, the most popular show when I was thinking about this was Bridgerton. Now, I'm not familiar with the show, quite frankly, but it appears to be popular. And so what you have in front of you is over the last 90 days from today, it will show you the popularity or the interest through Google searches over time, 90 days. Now, I wanted to compare that with something. And so the blue line is Bridgerton, and you will see all of that. But the red line is anytime someone were to search the topic of leadership. And so you will see that although there were a few peaks for the television show as opposed to leadership as a term, on average, leadership is searched through Google Analytics more so than this very popular show. Now, as I take it a step further, the yellow or orange area, depending upon what your screen is showing, that's going to show the equity term being searched. And what I wanted you to see before I show you a map was this. This idea of equity, just the word equity, is popular. It's something that's timely, and it's something that we have to be intentional with the verbiage that we're using, because equity can mean a plethora of different things, right? Just like leadership and just like those who watch Bridgerton can be for a lot of different reasons. But on average, equity is of significance, and I want to make sure that we're drilling down with the language that I use. And so this map right here provides that same key with the television show, the leadership, and then the term equity and the popularity or the searches within the last 90 days. And again, I start there because as we drill down to the notion of equity, I'm big on semantics, I'm big on language, and I want to make sure if the learning is going to continue for those of us who are in this space, we want to be intentional with the verbiage that we are using. And so equity was the term, but for today, we're going to focus on educational equity, right? Now, pictures can be worth a million words, and two things I wanted to really highlight there. The first of which, those two young children, or my youngest two, Isaiah and Jalen. And Isaiah and Jalen, they get into a number of things. And Isaiah and Jalen, trying to have them clean up their room, I thought was the most difficult challenge I would have as a parent. But trying to get them to do this thing called acting so daddy could get this shot right was another thing. And so what I found was that it was pretty difficult to have them do this. And so this was one of the bloopers as we were working with a green screen and getting this.
Face the grain. Although keep facing the grain. Face each other. Look at me.
It's hard to not smile.
And so Jalen just basically said it's hard to not smile. And that was the only job they had, was to not smile. And so we were able to work around. And I start there because previously, with the term equity in the education context, this was the mental model that many of us had. Images are worth a million words. This is the model that we have. We have some presumably Black students or students of color standing on what I would define as Amazon boxes. And by providing that, we are providing educational equity. Now, I wanted to make sure you understand that no longer do I see this image when I see the depiction of educational equity. I now see this. I see Jalen and Isaiah. I see my kids. And basically what that does it frames it a little bit different because now instead of this image just being there, it now elicits a visceral effect for me when we're talking about what's best for kids because these are my children. And I have to remember that the way that I feel about mine, the way that you feel about yours, the way that we feel about those individuals that we will essentially die for, every kid, every student that we come into contact with, someone has that same visceral feeling or effect on a kid with that kid. And so that's important for us to understand as leaders, as I humanize this image and make it so much that this is mine. Even with these being my children, this is still an oversimplification of equity. And I'll talk about that in a moment. Again, it's not all bad. All of us in some shape, form, or fashion are involved in some level of research. And so as researchers, we want to build on the research and keep continuing to contribute to the field, in this case of education. And so I think this image helped us, but now it's time for us to take it another step if we really want to achieve educational equity. Now, when I say educational equity, I want to be clear. I define it as this in the book. Creating and or eliminating policies, systems, practices, and schools that impact the experiences, the outcomes, and the access to resources for students from previously excluded groups. Allow me to expand. This notion of creating or eliminating was very intentional because if we're doing a number of things, we're providing, you know, opportunities for kids, we have a fundamental belief, we have mission statements, we do all of that. But if we are not having equity be actionable, I wouldn't define it as educational equity personally. Because what we're seeing is that the way that inequities are able to persist in our field, it's because of status quo. And in order for status quo to stop, you have to either create something or eliminate something. And I'll talk about that momentarily. I speak to policy systems and practices because that's more so the rules of engagement, the rules. We can have meaningful intentions. We can do all of that. But if we're not talking about the policies, the systems, the practices that govern the experiences that we have, then it's going to be hit or miss and it's not going to be sustainable. Now, the notion of outcomes, I think with educational equity, when we talk about gaps or disparities is the term that I'll use, need that be through opportunities or performance, those are outcome-based. And I think for some time we've been talking about that. But there's also a notion of access to resources. And we have been gradually going down that road. But don't forget about the notion of experiences and how that ties into educational equity. And I'm going to have a practical example about that. But this whole entire portion of this slide, I wanted you to get two things, one of which is that educational equity has to be actionable, meaning creating and or eliminating. And the next portion is previously excluded groups, right? Previously excluded groups. I use that term intentionally because we used to use the verbiage of underrepresented, right? And I think in education, I'm going to use some polarizing language because we typically use euphemisms that soften the blow. And underrepresented does not put the ownership on us. Let me give you an example. If I was starting a wrestling team of students who identify as female, I need to have students there. And so I can go out, I can recruit, I can do all of that. But if I were to talk to the principal, if I were to talk to the athletic director, if I were to talk to parents and they were saying, okay, you know, I thought we were going to have a team. Why don't we have a team? I may be able to say, well, I was out trying, but there wasn't a lot of interest or there were not a lot of students who identify as female wanting to wrestle. And thus they are underrepresented. Well, when it comes to inequities within the educational context, I have found that there have been barriers in the systems that have excluded groups of folks. And that's the reason why I use the term previously excluded as opposed to underrepresented. Now, I'm going to use a number of quotes, some of which they have to do with the book, some of which don't, but they help expand on what I'm trying to convey. In this tweet, it is a chance at success in an inherently inequitable game requires access to the rules. And for me, the rules are the policies, the procedures, the practices, the systems, and all of that, not
better, filling a better debt. Anything that deflects off of us taking responsibility, that our policies, procedures, routines may be the contributing factor more so than anything else with inequities. And thus, until the rules change, things will remain as they are. This is why I frame educational equity as creating and or eliminating policy systems as well as practice. And so let's go back to this image, which I did say it was a great starting point, but we have since evolved. The notion is that initially these individuals, in this case, Jalen and Isaiah, they want to see the game, but they just can't see. And so we provide Amazon boxes, other boxes for them to see. And because we've done that, we are truly being equitable. Well, what if I told you that the students who are shown in the equity image actually hated they had to watch the game from the outside and stand on boxes, but they had to because they were denied admission to the stadium due to their socioeconomic status, ability level, and race? Would your position on this image change then? And that's what it's about, perspective. And that is just an introduction into what we're dealing with when we're talking about educational equity. And so when we talk about educational equity, or when we talk about anything for that matter, it is very important to understand the journey that I'm going to focus on will be resources and race within educational context. And once you understand that about me, you will understand my positioning on some of these things. Now, I must quote, because anyone who knows me know that I'm a massive basketball fan and I'm a massive Air Jordan fan. So that image on the right, which was circa 1999, I would say, those are Air Jordans. And the image on the right, that was a pull-up mid-range, and it did go in, just for the sake of those two loves, both shoes as well as basketball. I digress. Now, my journey, these are 2020 numbers. And I mentioned Riverview Gardens High School and Melville High School because my journey started as a student in Riverview Gardens, which is 100% Black, 98% Black. And I attended Riverview Gardens from kindergarten all the way to November of my senior year. At that time, there was this culture shock piece because I transitioned to another school rather, that was Melville High School. And everything that Riverview was, Melville was not, and vice versa. And I'm going to give you some figures here in a moment, but that's the reason why I juxtapose Riverview and Melville. Well, at the same time, that was just as a student, but as an administrator, I was a principal for 3 years in Riverview Gardens. I actually attended Koch Elementary School, and I was there for 3 years as an administrator. And after those 3 years as an administrator, I then transitioned over to Webster Groves, which was vastly different. If I had to summarize it quickly, I would say that you're talking about an urban school or urban context on the left, and you're talking about your more affluent on the right. Here are some of the figures that I have. All of these are based off 2020 numbers, and it's not 1998 or anything like that, but you will get the gist of what the variances are with these different systems. So per pupil expenditure, local, not federal, but local dollars, you will see Riverview and you will see Melville. Same thing, you will see Koch Elementary and you will see Steger Sixth Grade Center. Average admin salary, again, you will see the two comparisons, and here you will see the same comparison. And so I must state that even though it has Steger Sixth Grade Center, when I was at Steger, those are actually two schools in one. You have the district sixth grade center, but then you also have an elementary school on the lower level. And so those are two schools at one, but the figures are still there. And last but certainly not least, for the sake of comparison, average experience within the entire district, not just administrative experience, but principals, teachers, you name it. Here's the comparison. Here's the other comparison. And so my experiences have been on polar opposites, both as a student as well as an administrator. And I think that's important to note because oftentimes we talk about, you know, different school systems and all of that. The best learning, the best professional learning one could do is to visit connect and serve kids that are of a diverse nature so that you can have the perspective and experience to move communities forward, regardless of the population that you have. And so this was an experience that I had as a student. I never experienced anything of a racial magnitude when I left as a student from Riverview to go to Melville from adults. But I did observe and experience something racially as it relates to students. And this is a quote from the book. And again, this is with my journey so you can understand where we're going. Nicole, which was a student, said to me, "So I'll take your picture first." I simply smiled and asked her, "How should I pose?" Now pause for context. I was a new student. I was in photography class. This was real photography class. We took pictures. We had to develop the negatives. All of that was happening. And so the teacher, who was a fascinating teacher, said, "I need for you all to go outside and take pictures of one another, and then we're going to do the work. And so that's the context. And I was working with someone. I was new. This person didn't have a partner. And so we worked together. And so I asked the question, how should I pose? And she replied, "Just stand there and act like you're hanging from a noose or something." I did not verbally respond. For the first time that I could recall, my body was having an emotional response that was indescribable. And so this notion of race I bring up, not because I want to have the conversation with great regularity. I don't think any person of color, any person who's experienced race-based incidents or racism, just calling it what it was, I don't think anyone wants to be the expert on always talking about these dynamics, but to ignore it would be a travesty based off of what I've seen. And so I use this as an element to go here. When deciding on how to achieve educational equity, please do not forget about the importance of including students in your plan. I've seen a lot of professional development plans and a lot of different conversations about what are we going to do for our adults? What are we going to do for our community? Do not forget the impact of students in that work. And so now that you know a little bit about my journey, I want to go back to this image one more time to the left. And again, I don't see that image anymore as much as I see my own children. But this notion of equity being actionable, it was conveyed on this image that this video that I am about to press play. If you are a Cowboy fan, go Cowboys. If you're not, I'm not either. I just wanted to show this because I believe it does properly convey this notion of educational equity. And so the running back, which is Emmitt Smith, he's the person that's going to run with the ball. But we're not really watching Emmitt as much as we're watching the fullback. And the fullback is Darryl Johnston. And Darryl's role is to eliminate things that are standing in the way or serving as a barrier to Emmitt Smith. Allow me to expand. Darryl is going to be the person that's going up and he's going to do what's called blocking. So while Emmitt Smith is getting the ball, Darryl right there to the right, there's a circle. His job is to eliminate those threats, barriers, et cetera, so that Emmitt can proceed. And so while this is football, allow me to go there within the context of what we do in school. Are we doing this to the discipline policies that have shown disparities? Are we doing this to some of the barriers for students getting into advanced courses or gifted programming, specifically those students of color and those students who receive special education services? Are we doing this to the one-sided Eurocentric curriculum that is only showing Black people in subservient contexts? What about for interviews? In the debrief, are we blocking those narratives that say this person doesn't fit or this person isn't what we need based solely off of bias and work that we haven't done? Until we have a system where not only you're doing this, but the person down the hall, your leader, your community, and students, this is the only image I see of a truly equitable system where our students can flourish. And if you notice, there's no such thing in this image as passive equity. It cannot happen. We have to be doing something, and that something, from my estimation, is creating and or eliminating. Allow me to proceed. If you are sitting at the table and being silent, you are passively co-signing on inequities. We all have a responsibility to use our platforms, our influence, and our positions for those who die for us to be here. Speaking truth to power with action, which is important, with action is not an optional task for leaders. Now, it would be easy for a teacher to say, well, I need to do this, but the parents won't do this, and so I'm kind of stuck. It's easy for the principal to say, you know, I want to do all these things, but my teachers won't do this. It's easy for the principal to say, hey, I want to do all of this, but central office. It's easy for central office to say, hey, I want to do this, but the superintendent. And it's easy for the superintendent to say, hey, I want to do all this, but my board won't allow. And then the board, we're going to go to voters, and then the cycle just repeats itself. We're in leadership for a reason, and we have a responsibility to use our platforms. We all have influence in some context that can help us move forward in this regard. Now, somebody may challenge or push and say, well, Dr. Fields, you know, you have a platform, you have this, you have that. At the same time, some of us are going to be able to be in the ear of board members or politicians or parent groups that have a lot of clout and voice and impact and have a conversation with them. And they will may not even be willing to listen to me or some of my ideologies. And so we have to get away from this notion of passively passing the buck as it pertains to what we're doing. Leaders lead, and I do stand on that belief system. Now, initial action steps that we all can do to achieve educational equity. That context was there, but now it's about the practical piece. Okay, Dr. Fields, talk about action. Let's talk about some of those things with strategies. Well, allow me to give you six. The first of which, ask yourself, am I being complicit in educational inequities? That's a trick question, because the question should be, how are you being complicit in educational inequities? Because we all are, even me still to this day, given the work that I've been a part of. Identify educational inequities. They are all there. They are there regardless of your field, regardless of the population you serve, regardless the size of your school. There are inequities that impact students of color, students who receive special education services, students with free reduced lunch, students who don't have parents on the board, students who parents work. The list goes on and on. There are inequities in our system that we have to look at. Step three. Challenge existing equity efforts and barriers to strengthen / systematize. We're doing something, and unfortunately, equity has turned into a buzzword. And so because it's equity, we feel as if what we're doing, but we have to be critical of even the things that we're doing. That's how we strengthen them. We have to throw away superficial trash equity. I cannot wait to get on that topic of trash equity with you all, because I do stand on that, and I use that polarizing language for a reason, and we'll go there in a moment. Wash your hands, which is essentially an acronym for get to work, anticipate pushback or resistance, strengthen that plan, and then help. Not help anyone else, but help yourself, because any of us who have been involved with equity work, true equity work that's actionable moving forward, most likely we've used some sick days or some mental health days, but this is some draining work, and we have to make sure we're taking care of ourselves, because I've seen some of the best equity empowerment leaders that are no longer in this field because they were broken down. And so we have to do a better job of this notion of taking care of ourselves and taking care of those that are really moving forward. And last but certainly not least, repeat steps 1 through 5 and bring a friend. The polarizing component of this is a play rather on COVID protocols, because as we see COVID-19 and we see a pandemic, I also see a pandemic with inequities and specifically racism within our educational context. Now, a lot of what I say will deal with systems, but people make up systems. And there are a number of things we will hear, but there's also this notion that we have to grapple with when it gets to the point that we have made it, right? We have made it in this system. And even though we acknowledge that we have made it and the system is not equitable, this is the way we navigate it. And so what we began to do is to be the gatekeepers, right? We began to be the gatekeepers of how students should act, because that's how I act. How Black students should act, because I'm Black. And that notion right there does create some problems. And so this quote was brought up with that in mind. The most concerning, however, has been witnessing adults who were previously excluded as students either choose silence or attempt to justify inequities out of fear of being viewed as ungrateful by an oppressive system. If our system is being oppressive, even though we made it, quote unquote, we are being successful, that does not give us the right to then be silent because in fear of different things, or to justify the inequities. And what I mean by justifying inequities, I have example after example, but allow me to use this one. We say things such as, well, my parents were always there and they helped me out. So if these students' parents were there, they would be able to do well. And this, yeah, I may be talking about a black student in this example, and I'm black and I know that harmed me, but that's just the way it is. We don't know any better. And so if you've ever read the book, The Pedagogy of the Oppressed, that's something that I'm certainly diving into. It talks a little bit about that notion and that narrative that we have to eliminate, because at the end of the day, we are still harming kids as a byproduct, and we're still being the gatekeepers for a oppressive system. And I think that's going beyond the surface, but all of this does show up when we're talking about the system that many of us are working in. Now, trash equity. I use polarizing language for a reason. And in my work, I wanted to use something that would cause us to have a challenge within ourselves. It was going to create cognitive dissonance, for lack of better terms, because it doesn't sound right. So when we think of trash, we think of something that's not good. It's waste. It's not good for the body. We need to get it out of our house as quickly as possible. It stinks, all of that. Well, the harsh reality is that some of the things that we are not doing and some of the things that we are doing in the name of equity are harming kids, are harming communities, harming colleagues. And we are painting it with the equity brush and we're thinking it's okay and it's really not. And so in the book, I don't like equity audits, but I do like the equity audit that's in the book because it gives you two options. What we're doing is either proficient within a context of equity or it is trash, right? And I know that verbiage doesn't sit well with some folks, but I keep it there because I do want a reaction or a response, because this is the business that we're talking about of dealing with kids. And if it's going to hurt a child or a student or cause some traumatic experiences because we don't want to have a conversation with a colleague, or we don't want to have a conversation or make a difficult decision because it's going to come back on us, that's going to impact kids in some shape, form, or fashion. And in a lot of regards, that's trash. And so for those of us who have purchased the book, thank you. But when you go through that equity audit, it is a inquiry-based audit where it asks questions, and then it does give you specific criterion as it pertains to trash or proficient. I'm not saying throw everything away. Some of the stuff that we're doing in schools or our organizations, we can recycle it, and maybe it can go to use. But a lot of it is trash. I have to call it how I see it. Now, deficit model thinking, when we talk about the image that I showed, and with that image, it has students standing on Amazon boxes, presumably. And in this case, my child or whatever, because of that image and because we have that mental model, it's easy for us to view our kids as needy, right? They are needing something and we have to provide. Now, I go into the book, and I don't have time to go into it right now, but sometimes providing to the less fortunate can be a selfish response, because it does make us feel good. And if it feels so good, then selfishly we could do some of these things to feel good when we're masking some concerns underneath the level. And so this notion of deficit model thinking, I'm going to play a quick clip from the mini podcast of the book. When you purchase the book, it does come with a mini podcast. And this notion of deficit model thinking as opposed to asset based model thinking came up. And so listen to what was stated by one of my guests.
And that was a time that you and I worked in a school community, and this particular school community was considered poor, impoverished, et cetera. And we were trying to fight those narratives. And so in my young, naive mind, I said, hey, any opportunity for the news or the newspaper to come in and support and help us and tell our story was great. But it was through those conversations that you helped me understand the big difference between folks telling our story through a deficit model as opposed to an asset-based model. Can you talk a little bit about why only framing things from a deficit standpoint within the context of students who have been previously excluded matters, and it can have an adverse effect, or it can actually worsen the blow, so to speak, on the narrative that's put out there about them?
Well, you know my stance on saviorism. And many times when we are in service providing organizations, even education, we feel like we know everything. And we know that sometimes that comes across as we have all the answers, and then the people that we want to, quote unquote, help, they don't. And they should not have a say and can't have a say. And so sometimes we want to focus on how we are helping them. So that deficit model, these young kids don't have, these parents can't afford. Those frames really go back to a root of how certain groups are seen in this country, and we continue that narrative over and over again. Eventually, community believes it, and even the child believes it. And that's really important for us to remember. Who wants to walk around with a t-shirt saying impoverished, poor, failing? Nobody. And so why do we give those terms to children and families instead of talking about ways that they bring their unique assets to the table for all of us to learn from?
Now, one of the chapters that I have, and some of the headings do correlate with the chapters that I have in the book. And one of the chapters that I have is called Having Said That, right? And with the Having Said That chapter, I talk about a number of different things. But in this case, essentially what I'm saying is that, you know, I'm so positive. I think these things are happening, but I still have some concerns. And this is a quote from the book. Allow me to expand. I have come to the realization that all organizations, and I do mean all, can take the initial steps to achieve educational equity. Having said that, it hurts me to admit that I do not believe educational equity as defined in this book, will proceed beyond the initial steps in most organizations. Now, again, I do go beyond the surface in that context. I start here, I have the conversation, then I show you how to go beyond the surface. But it does take sacrifice, and it does take a number of different dynamics. And because when I reflect on that, or because some of the schools or organizations that I've worked with, it's kind of like, well, this is as far as we want to go. We want the equity that's going to be comfortable. We want the equity that is going to make sure people are still smiling. And we want diversity on the side, so to speak. And it does not work that way. And so this chapter does expand on that notion. And this is the reason why I call myself pessimistically optimistic with some educational equity work. And an example of this would be, many of our equity efforts are trash. We do have evidence to support that. But I think we want to do better, like maybe, possibly, like I believe we do. And part of the reason why I believe we do is because of all the things we have shared in our mission statement, vision statements. Like it's conflicting. We have those things, but when it comes to the work and when it comes to being actionable and making a sacrifice for all of our kids, I just don't know. And that's me being vulnerable and putting that out there, because even I still suffer and struggle with some of these things, right? Now, in the having said that portion, just like all the areas, I focus on four different areas. I focus on how I was complicit and how I went through all of the six steps at the teacher's level, at the principal's level, at the district level, as well as at the state level. Because this is through NAESP, if you're not a member, you need to be a member right away, I might add. I am going to read a portion of the having said that within the principal context, right? And I want you to listen to see if you see yourself or your colleague and all of that, because we do continue to have work to do, even myself. But this is what I have. I have a statement regarding leadership that is quite polarizing, but true. The only thing missing from leadership are leaders.
If a principal cannot move the students and staff they are tasked with leading forward, they should not be at that particular school or organization or district. Based on my experiences, many leaders do not like to be held accountable, but want to hold others accountable. The interesting thing about accountability is that I was always at my best as a leader when I knew someone was watching and expecting great things from my leadership. When there is no accountability, things that should not matter as much begin to dictate what the leader focuses on. Within the context of equity, all systems should hold themselves accountable to the same term they use with regularity to show they care. That term being equity. But care without action is to be complicit. I need you to care enough to embed equity into your improvement plans. I need you to care enough to address the inequitable practices within your school, district, or organization. I need you to care enough that you stop being afraid of parents who you hear from often that engage in opportunity hoarding. We must hold ourselves to a higher standard. As I think about the successes I've had as a principal, what makes it more rewarding is it validates the time and sometimes pain that I went through as a building leader. Whether I was in a financially challenged area or an influence space, I upset people. There were people who did not like me. Some even did all they could to influence others would feel the same as they did. I have had supervisors who were threatened by my passion, my intensity, and my tenacity I brought to any room when discussing students and matters of equity. And so I'll pause there because I want you to purchase the book. But also, these are things that we continue to grapple with. And we're not on an island, although it feels that way. Many of us have gone through this, and there's a way to move forward. Now, one of the things that I've included, again, is some of the tidbits or tweets that expand on that. And this was sent on MLK Day. Subscribing to the belief that being an educational equity advocate will somehow prohibit you from promotions is a form of stereotype threat and oftentimes an excuse to do nothing. That's not what MLK condoned. If silence is a term of employment, I don't want it. And that's a self-care piece, to be authentic and unapologetic in your leadership for what is best for kids, communities, colleagues, et cetera. That is a form of self-care because ironically enough, some of the people who break down are those who are not allowed to be themselves. And when I say don't allow, they don't give themselves the grace to be who they are on their job. And that will create burnout from my experiences more than anything. As we talk about post-pandemic schooling, there are three aspects that I hit on: school suspensions, anti-racism, anti-hate practices, and curriculum and instruction and assessment overhaul that we have to embed or consider as we go into what's called post-pandemic schooling. I won't spend too much time on that one, but I will read this quote. It should be against the law for any student to never see themselves or their family as the protagonists, or to only see themselves and their families as the protagonists in the materials used to educate them and prepare them for the world. Another quote, the problem is, if I had to frame it, we want equity to coexist with inequity in our schools to keep everyone happy. We are open to increasing staff diversity, but closed to increasing diversity within the curriculum. We want to provide added supports for our students in need while simultaneously giving more to students who are not in need, thus perpetuating the same system we are trying to disrupt. And it's because of that that we see a lot of times that we're not moving or we're not having quantifiable gains in anything that we're focusing on related to equity. And so with student-centered, equity-focused leadership, being student-centered yet equity-focused is a theoretical belief that should guide your decisions and practices. It's a great interview response. It sounds great, right? just how that rolls off the tongue. I am a student-centered equity focus, and that's great. But if it stays as a theory and it doesn't lead to action, it's educational politics at the expense of our students. And that's something that we have to continue to keep pushing in the constant theme of my message. It has to be actionable in order for us to move forward for the betterment of our students. And so there are a number of barriers in a system. If you have your cell phone, go ahead and grab it really quick, because normally I would have already stopped and had you all talking, but I do want your perspective really quickly before I end up for some Q&A. You're going to have your camera ready, and what I would like for you to do is this. Put your camera on the QR code to the left, and there's a question. It's anonymous. The question is this. What are some barriers to achieving educational equity in your school, your district, or your community? Go ahead and take a minute to do so. Again, thank you ahead of time for those who will participate. The only thing you need to do with your phone is put that QR code right there on your camera. It will take you to the link and it will ask you that one question, which is anonymous. What are some barriers to achieving educational equity in your school, in your district, and in your community? Take a few moments to do that. Thank you. Bias and systemic racism. Implicit bias. Thank you. The superintendent's fear of acknowledging white privilege. Thank you. Now, please continue as I'm talking, and I know some of us are reading, that's a no-no, but hear me out for the sake of time. Please continue to put your information in there, because you will have access to this, and this can become a reference point and a learning opportunity for you and your colleagues, you and as you're looking there. This will be live. You can see it. While you're in Slido, there's also a column for you to click on Q&A. And even though we're going to have a Q&A here, if you have a Q&A that I don't get a chance to go to, you can put that Q&A in there. If you put your email address or something like that in there, I will personally respond to all of those questions. Again, I know we're tight on time. Thank you for that, the refusal to acknowledge that racism even exists. I do want to make sure we're continuing with the learning. So continue to put it in there. I'm going to go to the next slide for the sake of time. But that information is in there, and I truly appreciate all of the participation. Now, a barrier that we also have is this. I'm going to show my age and that I'm a technology geek and that I love what was called Google Glass. And the theory was that when you put these on, you were going to be so cool, right? You were going to be able to see all this technology, and it was kind of gimmicky. It didn't go to where it needed to go. And they sold us because the notion was that you can just look and see things and keep it moving. Well, sometimes when we say things are equitable or we're looking through an equitable lens, the understanding is that we will just be able to put on some glasses or some shades and see inequities. And that's not going to happen unless you put in the work. Many of us have staff members who we've sent through Lucy Calkins, literacy coaching, cognitive coaching for 5 years, and they're still not seeing what we would like for them to see. And so because of that, we have to remember that we have to continue to do the work. And though this image is one thing, the actual reality is another. And that's something that we have to continue to understand. Now, a barrier that we have is this notion of love. I absolutely love my students. But most of them did not need my love. What they needed was my grace. What they needed was my belief in them. What they needed was my influence to remove barriers that stood in the way of them being afforded a fulfilling and prosperous life. This cannot happen if you dismiss the premise of educational equity. This cannot happen without that. And so one of the things we had, and I talk a lot about barriers, one of the presentations, easy equity, oversimplifying equity and the harm that it causes. If you put your QR code there, it'll take you to one of our more popular presentations, and it dealt with a lot of this work, but I won't spend time on that. Now, you could also be the biggest barrier by diminishing your influence, by, you know, allowing fear and some of those things to dictate. Even if it's on a macro level, we have to keep leading because our students absolutely need us. The last thing that I will share before I go through the last few slides is this. I'm always asked, well, Dr. Fields, what are your thoughts on a DEI specialist position? Wouldn't that help our organization be equitable? Again, this is from the mini podcast. I'm just going to play a few moments of it. It is from Dr. Michael Macklin, who's a DEI specialist here in St. Louis, Missouri. And he responded to what this position will and will not entail.
And if you don't care about humans, If you don't care about people, it doesn't matter who you hire in your organization. It doesn't matter what person you have sitting at the table. If you don't have it true to your heart and about the quality and sustainability of person's life and person's education. The number one mistake that most organizations make, number one is they think that it's going to be a quick fix. So they hire a DEI director and think that that's going to be the end to all of the problems. When those problems were way there before that person became. The number two issue is there's policy over purpose, and it should be purpose over policy. Let me say that again. There's policy in front of purpose, and there should be purpose in front of policy. If the purpose is to ensure that you have more representation of minority figures or more, let me just say it, more black people in the classroom, right? Then policy should indicate that. But you have policy which drives a purpose, and so it goes backwards. My next point about that, Dr. Phillips, let me say this because I'm already there, right? Every school district establishes goals, CSIP goals, goals for the board. Every school district establishes goals. And if you really wanted it to happen, make it happen. It doesn't have to be at the end of 5 years. It doesn't have to be at the end of 2 years. It doesn't have to be in year 1 year. Make it happen now. It can happen. The next thing,
we don't have enough time, and I do want to use that as a reference point for you to check it out. You know, I wanted to pass around the digital collection plate because Dr. Macklin does take us to church, but I want to end with this. NAESP certainly allowed me to write an article that was published last week. If you haven't had a chance to take a look at it, you can put your camera on this QR code. And I end this article with something that I believe is so important. This is not included in the book, but this is probably the more profound component that I want to make sure you leave this presentation with, and that is this. Regardless, let me move this because I can't see it. I'm sorry. Your influence to set up in motion these steps will help your organization go beyond surface educational equity measures. Though it's not easy to admit, when your solutions for kids are on the verge of failing, we must keep our eyes on supporting students because some of them are grieving, not because our educational equity efforts are on a ventilator, but instead because our leadership is in need of life-saving support. The book, although it's about educational equity, it is a book truly about leadership. And so this image goes with that. We have to constantly look at ourselves and reflect and do better every single day because our kids deserve it. For being here, you do have access to the Educational Equity Professional Learning Plan. When we continue with the work, if nothing else, I'm a practitioner. I want things to be practical. We have to get results. We have to move forward. By going through the book and by going through the Educational Equity Professional Learning Plan, you will move forward in this work in an actionable context. And so with that, I do appreciate it. If you were to order the book, you can get it a plethora of different places right now. This was the information that I had a few weeks ago, but again, it is in all of the major bookstores online. You can get it in ICME, which is a Black-owned bookstore here locally in St. Louis, Missouri. Fantastic in what they do. If you're looking for diversity of text and all of that, ICME is the place to go. Obviously, Amazon, Barnes & Noble is available as well. And so here's, again, my name, my information by searching the – I'm sorry, clicking on the link tree. I will stop sharing my screen, and I will turn it back over to Dr. Branch again. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thank you, Howard. We did have one question in the chat, and I know we just have a minute or two, but they were wondering if you might comment on the discriminatory practices in accessing interventions, including special education.
Unfortunately, based off my experiences, I have seen too often that we use tier two if you're using some type of RTI, response to intervention, or MTSS component. I've seen us use, just skip over tier one, and we automatically start providing students with tier two supports. And oftentimes that's not even by the instructor or the teacher who's ultimately responsible for that tier one instruction. And so I stay away from blanket statements because there are some individual educational plans that will be some components that we have to look at. But second to that, or barring that, I would say we have to make sure that that tier one instruction is there. And what I found is by having a comprehensive tier one and by holding teachers and staff members accountable for tier one and not just pushing those kids off to someone else so we can have someone else to blame, you do begin to see some of the things work within the context of learner outcomes.
That's very well said. They are all our kids.
Absolutely. All of our kids.
Everyone, you have given us so many great things to think about today, Dr. Fields. I just appreciate, especially at the very beginning, you talked about giving students voice and choice, including them in the process. I love that explanation of passive equity. And that we just can't be standing by, that we do have to be doing something, and that something has to be actionable. And reminding us always that we're leaders for a reason and that leaders lead. So we're in a position as principals to make things happen. So I'm really looking forward to reading your book and just to having you again, being appreciate your partnership with NAESP and being able to connect with you, and appreciated you taking the time to be with us today.
Thank you so much again. It was so much content there using the Slido. If you go to the Q&A and if you put your email address, I will personally respond to all of those. Thank you so much, NAESP. If you're not a member, you need to be a member. If you're in Missouri, I'm quite certain you're already a member of MAESP. Shout out to Dr. Schooley and the work that he does. But we would also love to see you at the conference. I will be there in Chicago. A good friend of mine, Adam Welcome, is going to be there. And so we're going to be having conversation. Let's connect. Let's do this work together. And if I can ever be of any assistance, you could check me out on any of the social media pieces, or you could check me out on my website. Again, thank you so much. I'm humbled by this opportunity.
Thank you. And thank you, everybody, for joining us today. And we do hope to see you in Chicago in July.